Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 87 of the Lean 911 podcast. I was asked by a connection on LinkedIn, a guy named Simon Frost. He asked me a very profound question, which I couldn't reply to him because as I thought about the question, it was too involved to answer on LinkedIn. So I told him I would do a podcast episode on this, inspired by the question that he asked. And that question was, Mark, if you were architecting the Danaher Business System again, what would you do differently? So I thought about it, and all kinds of different things came through my head. We all know that the Danaher Business System is a very successful system. It's highly vaulted. They teach it at the Harvard Business School. People want to emulate it and all that good stuff, which I also tell CEOs they can't copy it or do it. If you want to do DBS, go work for Danaher because you got to do your own thing. Anyway, and craft your own system for your culture, for your industry, for your people. So, yeah, you can benchmark different things and all that. So the Danaher Business System was a success. However, I always held that the Danaher Business System was not immune to Kaizen, and it could be improved. So Simon's question to me was a really good one, and I thought I'd do a podcast episode on it because I think you could learn from some of these things. Now, I'm not arguing that anything that we did was totally wrong. Well, maybe a couple of these. You'll see when I get to it. But I came up with 12 different things I do differently. And in some cases, just eliminate altogether and not do it at all. So I thought about it, and it was 12 things. I could probably come up with 20 things if I wanted to. But it was 12 things that I came up with that we do differently. Let me start, and maybe in no particular order here. But number one, if you would remember the old Danaher Business System house. So we try to, you know, create a house like the Toyota house. And on the steps of the house, we listed, represented it anyway, all of the various and sundry tools of Lean. Single minute exchange of die, standard work, problem solving, TPM, 5S, visual management, daily management. I mean, go on and on. The list was endless, right? New product development. And in that layer of tools that we listed on the bottom of the house were two things that I think are the most critical for a Lean transformation. And that is standard work and problem solving. We put those two tools amongst all the other tools. And I think we did ourselves an injustice by kind of saying, yeah, that's a tool there you can select if you want to use that one. If that one applies, fine. And that's kind of how we sold it. We said, you know, you pick the tool that you want for the job at hand. As years went by, I really understood the importance of having a standard. Not that I didn't understand it back then, but I didn't put it on the same plane of importance as I do today. I don't know how many companies I go into today that just don't have standards. They say, hey, our ink process isn't working, or our order entry process has problems. Show me your process. Show me your standard. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I use the word standard and process interchangeably, so bear with me. And, of course, they don't have it. They don't have a documented process. And if they do, it's buried in some computer that was done 6 months ago by some engineer. It never got elevated to training people on it. There are no daily management systems to be able to support whether or not we're doing it or not. So in a sense, just because it's documented doesn't necessarily mean that you have a standard. So problem solving and standardization is key to Lean. And I do remember my first trip to Toyota. You probably heard me say this ad nauseum in other episodes, that a Toyota executive in Toyota City, Japan, said the difference between a world-class company and one that's not is the company's ability to solve problems. He didn't say fix problems. He said solve problems. And along with that, he said, even the great Toyota has problems, but we only solve our problems once. Very profound, right? So I would have done that differently. I would not have put all the tools on the bottom of this house and basically said, okay, yeah, pick whatever one makes the most sense. Because without standards and without problem solving, you've got nothing. None of the other tools, in my opinion, matter at all. Okay. So that's something I definitely would do differently. All right. Now, along with problem solving, I think I would have done a better job instilling leadership's problem-solving capabilities. We got okay at it. I wouldn't say we're great at it. A lot of leaders thought they intuitively knew how to solve problems because, of course, they're leaders. I mean, come on. I mean, they're the most brilliant guys in the room. And so I would have done a better job at really focusing on a problem-solving mindset and critical thinking skills, which some had, many did not. All right. So that goes along with my notion about problem solving and standards. They go together, by the way. So that was number two. Number three, and I think I have a whole podcast episode on this. We did a lot of audits of our companies. Primarily, they were tool audits. How well are you doing on standard work? How well are you doing on SMED? How well are you doing on 5S? Whatever. And I would have gotten rid of the audits. I would never have done another audit. First of all, these companies were supposedly my customers. So how is a supplier auditing my customer? How can that work in your business? Why don't you call up one of your customers and say, hey, we're going to come in for an audit, right? I don't think that works. I don't think that flies. Secondly, a lot of times there's a dog and pony show. They knew we were coming in. They cleaned up the week before, or the day before, the night before, the weekend before. Everything looked good. And we came in and measured that I'm on tools. And I want to, again, take this outside of business for a minute. And by the way, I'm not saying you can't be good at tools. You got to be good at the tools. But I just had a deck built in my backyard, and every one of those guys that build my deck knew how to swing a hammer, knew how to saw a piece of wood. They knew how to use all the tools. But the question is, do they know how to build a good deck? That's the question. Okay. And turns out they did know how to build a good deck. Thank God for me, for that, right? But just because you know how to use a tool doesn't mean you know how to build a house. So I would have gotten rid of tool audits. Tool audits also create a lot of angst, distraction. It focuses sometimes on working on things that do not matter to your business. If I don't have big changeover opportunities or my business doesn't have changeover, why am I going to measure somebody on single minute exchange or die? But that was on the list. And the companies had to react to it because it's going to be tested, Big distractions. And I don't think that was helpful at all to anybody to do these audits, right? So I would have gotten rid of the audits. That was number three. Number four, and again, I said these are not in any particular order, right? I think we would put more importance on respect for people. Yeah, we had this thing on the bottom of the DBS house called TAI, Total Associate Involvement. And, involving your people in Kaizens and all that is an element of how do you get, how to get employee engagement. And I think that falls under the respect for people category because you basically are asking the people that do the work to weigh in as how to improve it. So I think that's a real big deal, and that fits right into respect for people. But we also had a lot of leadership behaviors that were not respectful. All right. And I think we could have done a better job in putting processes in place to monitor that. Are people being evaluated as to how they, adhere to the company's values of blameless environment, for example? Let's indict the process versus the people, because most problems are process problems. I think Deming said that, right? So I came up with this saying that says that a value or a principle not backed by a process are merely slogans. Yeah, we solve problems at the lowest level, but you don't have a problem-solving process. We believe in career development, but we don't have a career development process. You see what I'm getting at? So I don't think in the respect for people department, we did the best job we could have done. We had some leaders that were just absolutely horrid in the respect for people department, but actually played a unbelievable acting game in front of their bosses. But when they got back into the rank and file of their business, they were tyrants. Okay. Now, I'm not saying everybody. I'm saying there were a few. And I think we could have done a better job policing that and putting processes in place that really held people's feet to the fire as it related to respect for people. So that's something I would have focused on. That was number four. And right along with that, number five, I would have eliminated performance reviews. I think performance reviews are A, they're batch oriented. They happen once a year. Yeah, you're supposed to give feedback throughout the year. I got all that, and I always did that. But everybody did it differently, and not everybody, a lot of people got blindsided on their performance reviews. And some people, no matter how much you coach them, cannot believe that they have opportunities for improvement, especially the younger generation that came in from these business schools. Nobody ever told them or gave them constructive feedback. When they struck out in Little League, everybody clapped and gave them high fives. I don't do that. I told my grandkids, you strike out, I'm not going to give you a high five. Sorry. It's just the way it is. So the performance reviews were batch oriented. There's a lot of tension, a lot of distraction, a lot of angst around performance reviews. They took a lot of time. And I think we could have came up with a better way to evaluate our people as opposed to this once a year sit down, fill out a form type of performance review. Okay. So I would have gotten rid of that. And I think that item number five, eliminate performance reviews, is in concert with Deming's philosophy of performance reviews. Because a lot of times we didn't even know how to evaluate performance. Now, in my performance reviews, I did evaluate my people 50% on the values, how well they held to our values of teamwork, communication, RFP, all that type of stuff. But it wasn't consistent around Danaher. People were kind of free to do whatever they wanted in that regard. So again, that the whole performance review thing, I'm not sitting here saying I have an answer as to how we could have done it better. I would have gotten rid of the batch once a year performance reviews, okay, and not and put a little bit more emphasis on process as opposed to once a year. Number six. You may know I am the, I guess, father of lean accounting. I developed the lean accounting system at Danaher's Jake Brake. I would have insisted more that our companies adopt lean accounting. Not all of them did. And again, people were left to their own devices to continue their old traditional standard cost variance analysis, absorption accounting games that they would play to dress up their profit and loss statement by just creating a batch load of inventory, not depending on whether or not it was the right inventory, just make a bunch of stuff, the easy stuff, so I don't, and not change over to the models that are being sold. Okay. I would have put a lot more emphasis on that, on value stream costing and the elimination of standard work, standard costs, which to me are a waste of time. If you ever sat through a standard cost variance analysis meeting and all the crazy variances that traditional cost accounting comes up with. Fixed overhead absorption variance, variable overhead efficiency variance, variable overhead spending variance, labor rate variance, labor efficiency variance. I mean, the list goes on ad nauseum, and nobody understood that stuff. Not even the cost accountants sometimes. It was a waste. And it turned out most of the countermeasures went like this. Oh, the standard is wrong. That's why we're off of standard. The standard's not right. And he got into those debates, which added zero value. So I would have went more towards an actual cost, value stream costing, lean accounting system, and done a better job on in instilling that throughout the organization. Now, there are a lot of hurdles to, you know, a lot of very traditional financial controllers that only knew one way to look at the world. And they try to instill their financial reports on the operations as if they were meaningful to them, and they weren't meaningful to them. Matter of fact, didn't provided no granularity at all as to what the hell was going on, and also came in a week or two late, looking in the rearview mirror. It wasn't helpful at all. So yeah, there was a big hurdle to get that done. It's still a hurdle today because I've gotten into a lot of debates with financial types, and again, me being an ex-CFO, I could talk their language, and they are so beholden to traditional accounting that never ask the question, how is this being used by my operating people, my leaders in all functions, right? And no, I mean, that was something I would definitely get rid of, or I'm sorry, do differently. Number seven, very similar, is eliminating MRP. A better emphasis on eliminating MRP. And when I talk about MRP, I'm talking about MRP scheduling, discrete scheduling of departments or businesses. I shouldn't say businesses, but I should say functions or processes, right? Completely a push system, totally batch. We still had businesses like our tool group still relied heavily on MRP. And, you know, we did okay with it. But when you're trying to optimize a system within a suboptimal framework, you're never going to be great. You're never going to be great. Now, I really think we should have pushed for that, and that would have instilled a lot of other discussions about single point scheduling, the creation of meaningful value streams, and what have you. So I think eliminating MRP goes hand in hand with the whole lean accounting notion here of eliminating work orders, eliminating discrete scheduling, which is totally creates inventory and push manufacturing. Okay. Number eight, we had a Danaher Business System, a DBS, Master Black Belt certification program. Looking back on that, I would have killed it. I would have killed it now. I would not have put that in place. I'm against certification. I have a couple episodes on this. Whether it be a company-wide certification like the Shingo Prize, it's a distraction. They add no value. And why do you want a third party to evaluate how well you're doing in lean? What do they know about your business? Matter of fact, they've certified people that, that quite frankly, went out of business the next year or have major quality problems. Totally missed it. So why would I want a third party coming in and certifying me? I have a whole episode on that. Go back and check it out. Individual certifications. The delusions of grandeur that these things create. Hey, I'm certified Master Black Belt in DBS. You just scratch the surface. Not almost anybody can get that black belt if you check the right boxes. But do you really know how to transform a business? Do you really know how to do it? I would have gotten rid of that because I think it took a lot of time, a lot of resources. And again, I think it was just a major distraction. So this whole certification, which is primarily tool-based, show me how if you know how to calculate tack time. Show me if you know how to calculate a Kanban quantity. Really, did we ask, show me how you use tack time? As it results as it applies to labor, to equipment, to inventory. Okay. Show me how you use it. We didn't do that. Okay. So the whole certification thing, I would have killed. I would have killed. Number nine, our goals. I think I would have insisted that we stop with these ridiculous goals of 98% on-time delivery. I remember Iwata from Shingajitsu, God rest his soul. He said to me, Deluzio-san, why are you, I'm sorry, it was Nakao. He said, why are you planning on failing 2% of the time? And why don't you call the customers, the 2% right now, and tell them you're going to be late? That's the kind of challenges we got from Shingajitsu. Okay. Quality is the same way. Iwata said to me, Deluzio-san, I don't understand American mentality with Six Sigma. 3.4 parts per million. Why aren't you targeting zero? Now, when I put this out on LinkedIn a while back, all these engineers wrote me in disagreement. Technically, you can't get zero defects. Technically, and he gave me all the reasons. Some guys do charts and all kinds of other things. They failed to realize that zero defects is a mindset. A mindset, not, whether or not you could do it or not, and Henry Ford once said that if you don't think you can, or if you think you can, you will be right. Okay. So getting rid of these crazy 98% goals, oh, we don't want to demoralize our people by putting 100% down. Really? I mean, you're at 65 now. 98 is not going to demoralize them, or they're going to be a little bit afraid to say, well, how are we going to get there versus 100? Come on, give me a break. So this was a mindset issue, and I would have insisted that we target that. Now, what we did do right in delivery was we did say, hey, look, our expectation is that you measure the customer request date, not to promise date. You can measure the promise date all you want. We're not going to look at it. We look at request date, and there were businesses that had 95% to promise date, and when you recalibrated, they were 30% to request date. So I guess what the customer has to say doesn't matter, right? We mark ourselves green, customer marks you red. We call those watermelon KPIs. All right, we don't want to do that. So I would have changed that goal of 98%, but we did do that right by looking at request date. Okay. We also insisted that at minimum, you're going to improve your quality at least 50% per year. And a lot of times that wasn't enough. So that was another thing I think I would have kept in. Number 10, a better focus on the design engineering group and their tie to manufacturing. We still had a lot of businesses throwing designs over the wall into manufacturing. And all the related problems that you guys probably are dealing with today, right? We could have done a better job. Now we did a really great job at Jakebreak on this. We took our new product development cycle down from 72 months to 18 months. Okay. Otherwise, we would not be able to play with Toyota, Hino Motors, a division of Toyota, in Mitsubishi. They were developing engines in 18 months, both those companies. Okay. Diesel engines. So we had a necessity to bring that down. And the only way to really do it is to have a multifunctional design team, which included design, manufacturing, finance, HR, procurement. Who am I missing? Okay. Oh, in the commercial group. And every design meeting weekly. That whole group attended. And the emphasis, depending on where you were in the tollgate process, changed. Let's say at the beginning it was marketing, getting voice of the customer, doing some QFD type stuff. Then it turned over to design. then eventually it shifted over to manufacturing. So each took a lead as we transgressed through the tollgate process, but the team stayed together. The kind of conversations, even me as a finance guy, hey, why are we drilling this hole horizontally? I got to go out and buy a $200,000 piece of equipment just for that one hole. Can you make it vertical so we can machine it on a vertical CNC? 3 days later, they came back with a new design. And I was a finance guy when I did that. So you see, I think we could have done a better job outside of JakeBrake and the other Danaher businesses of really marrying the design engineering with that, and also pushing 3P, because we created the first 3P line, not only in Danaher, in my Hino line, but also in I think in the country, with Nakao, Chihiro Nakao, who's the father of moonshine, as well as the Hino engineers. I would have pushed that whole engineering part, not only looking at product design, but also looking at process. Okay. That was number 10. And related to that is number 11. I think more focus upstream versus downstream. A lot of times we reacted and decided on our Kaizen priorities based on what was happening downstream. And I've learned over the years that the root cause of any problem is not going to be where you found the problem. Most likely, it's going to be upstream. So I think the focus on upstream was maybe not as robust as it could have been. Okay. I'm not saying we didn't do it, but I don't think the notion of doing it was common thought. And I would have pushed that a little bit more. All right. And number 12, right along with that, is more emphasis on leading indicators versus lagging indicators. You can measure productivity all you want, but your productivity, for the most part, is going to be a reflection of how well your processes are run. Do you have a lot of defects? Do you have a lot of machine downtime? You don't have standard work, that type of thing. And oh, yeah, the outcome is some productivity number that you concoct at the end of the day. No, you got to look upstream, okay, and look at leading indicators. Let's take safety. Measure lost time accidents. That's a lagging indicator. Maybe a leading indicator is, hey, what's my compliance to PPE, personal protective equipment? I should see a correlation of people wearing their PPE and better safety numbers. That's a leading indicator. All right. So I think that might go along with the problem-solving one in terms of really looking at metrics that matter relative to the process and again, leading versus lagging. I like to use the scale. If you're trying to lose weight, you can get on a scale and you can measure your weight in pounds or in kilograms, however you want to do it. Now, if that's the only measurement you have, then what else are you managing? But if I were able to manage the right leading indicators versus that lagging indicator called weight, leading indicators like calories, the amount of exercise I get, the amount of sleep I get, my nutrition, all those things. And if those are the right leading indicators, my lagging indicator should show progress. I don't think we did a good enough job on looking at leading indicators. And we could have maybe done a better emphasis on that. So those are the 12 things I would do differently if I were to re-engineer DBS again. But you know, when you put these systems together, you know, a lot of things seem so obvious to you until you mature and time goes on and you start looking at different things from different, you know, perspectives. And you know, I've had the opportunity now to consult on six different continents in dozens of different and totally different industries: logging, fracking, pharmaceutical, healthcare, all kinds of manufacturing, you name it. Not too much I haven't done. From semiconductors to PCBs to all kinds of machining, galvanizing, plating, heat treat, okay, insurance, financial services, all kinds of different businesses in that regard. And at the end of the day, they all are run on processes, and the fundamental principles of lean apply to all of those businesses. Okay. So when you look at all that experience over the years, and you're distanced away from the battle, you know, you're not in there every day trying to perfect DBS like I was, and trying to, you know, instill that our talented leaders with DBS thinking, you get some perspective after the course of time, and you start seeing what you would have done differently. If you're not in that role, you need to check yourself at the door, because anything can get better. And I know I came up with a dozen items here. After this episode, I'll probably come up with another half a dozen or so that I should have included in this podcast, and maybe make this 18 things instead of 12. But check yourself, because what may seem obvious to you and makes total sense may not seem obvious as time goes on, as you get a few more, you know, what they say in baseball, at bats. Sorry, that's a baseball term for my foreign friends who are listening to this. But the more repetitions you get, the more you start seeing things. And I'm not trying to discredit the DBS. Of course, I'm very proud of it. It's a legacy of mine, and it's something that has lasted now going on 4 decades. There's not many people who could say that, maybe except for Toyota. All right. So I'm very proud of that fact. But I'm also a realist to say that I would have done some things differently, and here they are. So hopefully you could take these things and apply them to what you're doing today, because my guess is many of you today are doing exactly what we're doing here. Okay. What I mentioned, I should say. So hopefully this is helpful. And if you, again, I want to thank Simon Frost for asking me that question. It was a very insightful question, and it inspired me to do this episode. Okay. So, building the Danaher Business System, 12 Things I Would Have Done Differently, Episode 87. Thanks for everything. Write me at mark@lean911.com if you have any questions or comments. Did I miss anything? Do you disagree with anything I just said? Let me have it. Love to talk to you. Okay. Be good, stay safe, and stay lean. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.